Blog Talk Radio.
She's the talk of the town, with her pointed interviews and inescapable positive attitude, leading the charge across the world to positize our planet. It's Patricia Raskin, Positive Living, right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's all natural and totally authentic Patricia, the media maven of positive messaging, with an open mic waiting to hear from you. And now, with Patricia Raskin, Positive Living, your host, Patricia Raskin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to Patricia Raskin, Positive Living, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Cool to be with you today. And we have a great guest. My guest is Diana Sheets, and her brand new book is called American Sweet, which is a page-turner about a woman searching for herself and her sanity in the civility of America's heartland. And Diana Sheets has a research scholar appointment in the English and History departments at the University of Illinois. Prior to moving to Illinois to write fiction and political commentary and literary criticism, she worked in sales and sales management in metropolitan New York. She's the author of the previous novel, The Cusp of Dreams. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your program, Patricia.
Thank you. How did you come up with this idea for this particular novel?
Well, I came up with it because I moved from metropolitan New York about 12 years ago and to the Midwest. And it, even though my mother had come from Iowa and half my family had gone to University of Iowa, it seemed like a very, very foreign place. So I thought, we could have a lot of fun with this. Why not have the world of Garrison Keillor collide with the world of Woody Allen, but have it done in the form of a chick lit novel?
So yeah.
That's what motivated me. And also, I was drawing from some of the chick lit novels, like Sex in the City or Jones' Diary, and I thought, why not have some fun with this? They now own women's fiction. Why not have a parody of that?
Well, what's interesting is that you wrote political commentary and literary criticism. How does the political commentary fit into this, or does it?
Well, I began writing the commentary because of the difficulty of getting what I would call meaningful fiction published, and I began to feel and realize that a lot of the fiction out there I realize I'm entering into contentious ground here, but I felt it was very feminized. And some of the challenge I had in getting published was that everything is no longer a, quote, manly world. And this really affected my worldview and my politics. So I thought I needed to discuss why fiction is what it is today and what needs to be done to restore some of the vigor to storytelling.
Yeah, which is really important. In terms of the book and in terms of the story, let's tell our listeners a little bit of the story. It's a story of how a dyed-in-the-wool single New Yorker adapts to the life of the land of overly friendly people. And, there's a comedy in here as well. Now, you also moved in your own life. So is there any parallel there?
Oh, of course. There's a lot of parallel. I mean, I think for anybody, I grew up in Connecticut and lived in metropolitan New York for 22 years. And when I was in the metropolitan New York area, I thought of myself as a gal from Connecticut. But when I went to the Midwest, I realized that in many respects I had become a New Yorker. And it felt really, really strange. And I was always having to coax myself into saying, be nice, be nice. And it's the land of overly friendly people. So people are always coming up to you. They're, wanting to talk to you. And you go into stores, and there doesn't seem to be much there. And you're thinking, why are they coming up to me like this? So you have to sort of re-educate yourself, really realize that you're really with people who their world is a very human place of individuals, and you really have to respond on that level.
But isn't that good? Isn't that good in a way? I mean, in the land of technology, where we sometimes we never even meet the people we communicate with, isn't that a good thing?
Oh, it's a fabulous thing, but it takes adjustment. If you're a New Englander and you're used to having this private bubble around you, or if you're in the aggressive metropolitan area, you always have an edge on. And so it takes a while to take the edge off and to realize that these are regular Americans who are wonderful people who get up every day and they work hard and they want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's what this program's all about, really, positive living.
Right.
Now, your book, American Sweet, tells its richly unfolding story through a diary entries of three formidable women, Rosalind Selby, her elder daughter Sophie, and her younger daughter Asia. And Arisa has left Manhattan in the wake of 9/11 for a more civilized life on the prairie. Rosalind, the Manhattan widow, convinced that she's Jewish, thinks that Arisa is really crazy. Sophie has her own problems trying to maintain her picture-perfect family in the Connecticut suburbs. So what you're doing is you're writing almost with an anthropologist's eye here in terms of a commentary on the way these three women who were, you know, blood-related cope differently.
Right. I'm really writing, I think, in the tradition of Tom Wolfe, only this is our domestic tale of America. And by having it in the Midwest and in New York and in Connecticut, with Arisa also having an affair with a Hollywood screenwriter, it really covers the whole landscape of America. And the mother is a very interesting character. She's very strong. She's in her early 70s, very overbearing, very angry that her values are gone. So she's Christian, but she thinks she's Jewish, and she swears in Yiddish. And I have a glossary at the end, but the phrases are wonderfully colorful. So, and the daughter in Connecticut, she has three sons and a husband, and she's juggling a lot of things, and I think a lot of women who are trying to do all that can relate to that. And then Arisa is the single woman in search of a new life. And so they have all three of their diaries are there. Often they're contradictory. Every time there's a family gathering, it's a social calamity. But I think also you get the sense of the richness of modern multicultural life in families today.
Yeah, and expressive and dramatic.
Right. And emotional. I think, well, parroting chick lit, I think that people would be very happy to, you know, I mean, it's a very moving tale about the, you know, about the daily struggles of these three women to find meaning and engage in the modern world. And it's funny. It makes you laugh about the social predicament that we inhabit called life today.
Hmm. What made you choose newspaper articles and diaries for the narrative structure?
Well, I use the diaries, which actually there's a crime incident at the beginning of the novel, which is actually the end of the story, and then I go with newspaper articles. What's great about that is it can convey the whole celebrity scandal aspect of the conclusion of the novel with all the different newspaper reports and gets all the voices of the main characters of the story in there, except for Arisa, whose story is really being told. So that jump starts the novel, and then it goes into the diaries. And what I like about the diaries is you're able to convey in first person three very, very different voices, you know. And it's much you can bring home their different styles of thinking and being very powerfully through a diary novel.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. One of the things you write about is hunting varmints with a crossbow. Have you actually done that?
No, I haven't, but I live on a property that's very similar to Arisa's. It was designed and built by Harry Weiss, who did the Washington, D.C. subway system. So it's this ultra-modern, early 50s, tiny, tiny place on 2 acres of land, and it's all glass, so you look at your whole ecosystem in the backyard. And if you're trying, I didn't even really know what a garden was until I moved to the Midwest, even though my mother raised, grew vegetables and things. And so all of a sudden I'm looking at my ecosystem being destroyed. And I had a friend who's a writer who had a bow and arrow and talked about using it. And I thought, well, this is fun. I can have my character do that. So after she has this terrible affair with this Hollywood screenwriter, she comes back determined to write her memoir, and she takes up weapons, and she's, you know, on guard against the world attacking her. And so it's an outrageous comedy in a sense that she's hunting down varmints in her backyard, but what she's really trying to do is defend herself against hostile forces in the world. So.
And you're doing it almost through imaging. It's like imagery because people wouldn't do that, but it's almost showing that inner part of ourself that may have the desire to do those things, but we can't.
Right.
So we live through that character that can really yell and scream and shoot and do the things that sometimes we wish we could. But
and
that's
she's taking, you know, she's trying to take responsibility for her life and move on with things. And so instead of being totally overwhelmed by a terrible, terrible relationship, she's moving on and externalizing things and getting on with her life and getting revenge. I mean, her memoir is an act of revenge against Goss Bilkum, who, you know, really entered into this terrible, terrible relationship that she first thought was going to be this romantic love story.
So how do we turn that around, Diana, since my show is Patricia Raskin Positive Living? How do we take this and turn this around so that people can get a solution and be inspired?
Well, I think one of the things that's very interesting, every time this family gets together, there's a challenge because they have all these different perspectives. And the final story is a mixture of cultures there, where at Christmas time they're celebrating Christmas, Hanukkah, Diwali, which is the Indian celebration, and Kwanzaa. And the adults are really having a challenge with all of this, but the sons love it. They love all of this multiculturalism. They love the sharing of culture. They think it's fun and exciting. So I think this is a story that really talks about the challenges that Americans are facing today. And it looks at, you know, the lives of three women who try to negotiate with the challenges they're facing in their daily lives. And it enables you to laugh at some of our social predicaments, but also find a path to, to realization.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the writing. We have a few minutes left in terms of being a novelist. There are a lot of people that would like to write novels, and it's not an easy chore to have a novel published. Now, you can self-publish a book, but let's talk about writing and the differences between writing fiction and nonfiction, and you've written both.
Yes. Well, I'm trained as a historian, so the thing that really motivates my fiction and which makes my storytelling different than other writers out there is I want to tell the contemporary American story by means of fiction. So I think in fiction what you want to do is borrow aspects of the world that you know and then also do extensive research so you can make the story authentic. But it's very different from writing a non-fictional story where you're really doing a lot of research and getting a lot of field experience. I think the big challenge with fiction is you have to create this imaginary world, and when your readers read it, they have to inhabit that world, and it's in a sense it's more challenging than a non-fictional story because you have to take them into this other world and they have to see it in its glory. Whereas in a nonfiction world, you're drawing a lot more easily on things that they may know and understand in their daily lives, but you've got to get all of the details right. So I think what makes me different as a fictional writer is that I really try to make, first of all, every fictional novel I write different, but I'm also doing a lot of that investigative research and background research that's typical of nonfiction in my fictional stories.
Interesting, which also gives us a dose of reality, too.
Yep, which I think is really, I think if fiction is going to remain relevant in our lives, it really has to be looking at our social landscape.
Mm-hmm. All right, and so now let's talk about getting published. There are a lot of people who write, and let's talk about that.
Well,
hard one.
I think it's getting very difficult because you've got more and more people leading very, very busy lives, and reading is only one very small part of their lives. So audio, podcasts, you know, all these other ways of getting information today. So I think getting noticed by a major publisher is difficult because they have financial things that are driving them. So I don't really have any easy answers for how somebody might do that. It's been a long struggle for me, to be quite frank. My first novel finished in 2000, and it took me quite a while to find a publisher.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy story, but I think if people have interesting stories to tell, they need to persist.
Yeah. Also, give some advice and encouragement to people who just want to write, or they want to express themselves. How important is it, even if they don't get published, to put it in a journal or put it in a diary?
Right, and I think one of the other things they can do is, I mean, the Internet is out there. You can put a website up there, and you can put your writing out there, and the wonderful thing about that is it's available to the whole world. And so there are really, in a way, there are no longer any real impediments to getting your story out. Also, the print-on-demand publishers mean that anybody who has a story to tell, who really wants to get their story out, can do it. And they can get their work published. There are many different ones that are out there. So, and then it's simply a question of how you go about marketing yourself and your story so that you can get the attention that you think your story deserves. But I think the greatest thing about the Internet is, you know, it's out there. Your story can reach many, many different people, and it can be a path to, if you want to get published through conventional publishing houses, that can be one door that opens through that venue.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's talk a little more. I'm going to take a few more minutes, and let's talk a little bit more about the other novel. You know, you had a novel called The Cusp of Dreams, which you said was much more irreverent than American Sweet.
Yes, The Cusp of Dreams. I worked in corporate sales for 12 years in metropolitan New York, and I was working with the people who were working with me were struggling to survive economically, and it was very, very difficult. And a lot of these people weren't making it, and it was in manufacturing, which really has been in crisis since the 50s, but by the 80s was really falling apart. So the crisis we're experiencing now was happening, you know, at least a decade earlier in manufacturing. So this novel presents the stories of ordinary workers who are working for this sales manager. Her name is Sue. And in a sense, many of them are failing. They don't know how to get up in the morning. They don't know how to tie their shoes. But it's trying to humanize these very ordinary people who are struggling to make a living, who really are having a very, very difficult time. So that story is what I call tragedy with shards of humor. The humor is there to keep you reading to the end. And Sue, the character, is pursuing the great American dream. And by the end of the novel, she's risked everything, a marriage, all her material possessions. She's out in Silicon Valley. And it's not clear what's going to happen. Is she going to have that great success, or is she going to have sacrificed all her dreams? And the company she's worked for, you know, people have been downsized. So it's a very dark tale. I mean, people can recognize themselves and their colleagues and their friends in this story. But I think it's also telling, you know, it's in the tradition of Death of a Salesman and David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross. And what I'm asking is, if Death of a Salesman is the failure, an individual, Willie Loman's failure, and David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross is the societal failure of men in a business workplace, The Cusp of Dreams is looking at what happens when women are in the workplace and they become every bit as vicious as men in order to survive.
Well, again, Diana, you know, my program is about positive thinking.
Yeah.
So really what I look at in this is, where's the hope?
So here's the hope. You're looking at a story like this and you ask yourself, what do I have to do to survive and remain a human being? How is it that I cope in this very challenging social and economic market? What are the social resources I take with me to get on with life? And when life knocks you down, how is it that you go about picking yourself up? Mm-hmm. And I think this novel can give you a sense of the struggle and also the hope and the ability you have to pick yourself up in life.
All right. What would you say is your message for our listeners in both of these books, The Cusp of Dreams and American Sweet? What would you like our listeners to gain from the books and from your work? What would you say?
I think fiction, to be important, to be lasting, should be looking at our social landscape. I think we're living in very challenging times.
Yeah.
And I want my fictional stories to tell what I call the contemporary story of today. So I think it's very important to not just live your life, but understand why things are happening the way they're happening. And I think with that, you get the tools to navigate in your world in a more effective way. So my stories are looking at the challenge of modern-day life.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, your website is literarygulag.com. What can people expect when they go on your website?
Well, I've got a bunch of very interesting stories about why fiction has become irrelevant, why it's no longer telling the American story, or even meaningful stories at all. So you don't have to necessarily agree with it, but it, I think you'll find it interesting and controversial. I'm also it also has a number of political essays, particularly of the 2008 election and on this recent election, and I'm looking at it, I just want your readers to know so they're forewarned, it's a conservative perspective. So, but I think it provides a lot of interesting documentation, so even if you don't agree with that point of view, you might find the arguments interesting. So it's a, it's, there's nothing out there like this. I've been interviewed by, you know, the Christian Science Monitor and the Financial Times, so there's a lot of about my analysis of politics. There's a very interesting article on the worldviews of conservatives and liberals, an essay in August of 2008, and it was picked up throughout the internet and read widely, because it was looking at how conservatives think versus how liberals think.
Can people write to you on the website? Can they give you their opinion?
They certainly can. The website, again, is Literary Gulag, and my email is dianasheets@literarygulag.com.
Which is literary G-U-L-A-G.
Yep, just like the Russian gulag. I'm arguing that I'm in the gulag, and only in the gulag do you have the freedom to tell the truth.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's very interesting.
Thank you, Patricia. I really enjoyed having the opportunity to speak with you and to tell my story to your listeners.
Well, thank you. All right. My guest today has been Diana Sheets. You can go to her website, literarygulag.com. She's the author of American Sweet, which is a novel, and Cusp of Dreams. All right. Stay on the line, Diana. Okay, folks. So that's it for today. We'll be back with you at another time. Just check. What you need to do is go to blogtalkradio.com and then /positive-living. And you'll see where my upcoming shows are. Also, go on my website, patricia@patriciaraskin.com. That's my email, but patriciaraskin.com. I have several other radio shows, and it's all listed right on the website. All right, remember, stay healthy, stay happy, get the support you need, and know that you can make your dreams come true. Until next time, I'm Patricia Raskin for Patricia Raskin Positive Living, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Patricia Raskin Positive Living with your host, Patricia Raskin, leading the charge across the world to positize our planet. Make an appointment right now for a lifestyle destination radio network exclusively dedicated to positizing our world.